Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Mike Force Podcast. It is your host, Mike G. I want to say happy Veterans Day to all the veterans of the U.S. military, as well as those who served in foreign wars. This time in 1954, President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed a bill proclaiming November 11th as Veterans Day. Since then, Veterans Day would come to acknowledge veterans of all wars and then all who once served in the U.S. military. I think that's important to understand the history, where it comes from, remembering those veterans who served, remember those veterans who served in foreign wars and combat, and most importantly, remembering those who paid the ultimate sacrifice. I know we have Memorial Day, that's part of that, but I also think that it's important to acknowledge as veterans the sacrifice of so many who are no longer present to be here to celebrate Veterans Day. Memorial Day, Veterans Day is a day that a lot of people will spend a lot of time with their families, which is very important, exercising those freedoms at the cost of war, at the cost of sacrificing American lives, but also remembering that there's a whole bunch of people who are left behind, including the family members of the veterans who served, who paid the ultimate sacrifice. Again, I know there's Memorial Day and people will make a distinct difference between veteran and memorial. I don't do that because I want to honor the sacrifice of those that didn't come home with my own service and sacrifice by telling their stories, which is part of the reason I want to have this podcast on Veterans Day. If you're listening to this podcast on the Mike Force on YouTube, you can go to our YouTube channels, the Mike Glover Actual channel, which is my personal channel, as well as Philcraft Survival, where we did a series, a whole bunch of content around veterans, including Joe Sadach, a platoon sergeant from the 82nd Airborne Division, who jumped into Panama during a time of conflict and war and served his country. We tell his story and the stories of the men he served with. And again, I think it's important to highlight that kind of stuff. I want to mention a couple stories because on this day in 2006, this week of 2006, we lost one of my teammates, Tung Nguyen. Tung Nguyen was a descendant from Vietnam who came over here, migrated over here, and served his country as a Green Beret, and was one of the most accomplished snipers and shooters. I believe he won the Joint Special Operations Command Small Arms Competition and was known as being one of the best shooters in my company at the time, Bravo Company, 2nd Battalion, 3rd Special Forces Group, B-23, otherwise known as the Commanders in Extremist Force. I won't mention all of the things that I deal with veterans in fighting as far as the details and bore you with the antics. But what I will say is on Veterans Day, especially, we should be working together to tell the stories of those men and women who sacrificed it all, but honoring each other's service as well. All the brothers and sisters that I serve with during my time in the military from 1997 to 2016, man, what a ride. What an amazing experience for me and for so many others that I serve with. I served in the military my first 4 years of the military in the 90s at the 3rd Infantry Regiment. Not what I wanted to do. I talked about this on Black Rifle Coffee's veteran podcast with some great Americans, great American patriots from Black Rifle Coffee. Me and Jericho, I believe, were talking about this on the podcast. I wanted to be a U.S. Army Airborne Ranger, but didn't have the opportunity to. Whether it was just my destiny or the recruiter kind of screwed me, I think it was both. I had to go to the 3rd Infantry Regiment, which I didn't know what it was, in order to do a 4187 to laterally transfer. From that experience, I tried to be all I could be, which was the motto, be all you could be, by going and volunteering for every potential school available. I got my expert infantry badge, went to Airborne Ranger School, and guarded the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier as a badge holder at the Tomb of the Unknowns in Arlington National Cemetery. It's where my first experience as a young man, where I learned about honor, sacrifice, duty, and guarding the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. I had over 650 walks, a couple hundred guard changes as the person who changes out the two guards while I was on third relief at the Tomb of the Unknowns, and then actually had a break in service prior to, I had a break in service September 3rd, actually, of 2001, prior to 9/11 happening. There wasn't a war going on, so I transferred to the National Guard and then quickly realized as the global war on terror developed in front of us that we were going to be at war. So I went back in, I went to Special Forces Selection, and the rest for me is really history. I served in 3rd Special Forces Group. I went to 10th Special Forces Group, standing up the Commanders and Extremist Group as a team sergeant. So did my E8 time. I served in Joint Special Operations Command for a few years, making E8, making Master Sergeant. I served in 19th Special Forces Group as a team sergeant and then got promoted to Sergeant Major, where I was the Special Operations Detachment Africa Operations Sergeant Major. Had an amazing round of trips with amazing men and women. Did 5 rotations to Iraq, coupled to Afghanistan, deployed to Libya, deployed to other places in Africa. Had an amazing experience overall. I can't think of too many bad experiences outside of the admin and the politics of things, but my actual literal experiences, whether it was in combat and war from Afghanistan, Iraq, mostly the Middle East to Africa, were amazing. I served with a lot of amazing human beings. Again, some that didn't come home. One of my good friends, Ben Bittner, Benjamin Franklin Bittner, born on the 4th of July, lost his life by stepping on a pressure plate IED while I was at war as a team sergeant in Afghanistan. My son is named after him because of his sacrifice. And I think every rotation to war, we lost a guy that I knew personally that was in our unit, potentially in our troop, in our company, or in our organization. We lost a guy every single rotation. I'm trying to think back. Lost Oshner in 05, lost Tung in 06, lost Justin Munsky in 07. Every rotation, we lost a guy. I remember when I transitioned out of the military into civilian life, I started writing down and recording guys that I knew that were killed in combat and filled up a leather bracelet with 14 names. It's not easy losing comrades, but when you lose brothers in war, it's not that it's not expected. I mean, a lot of the guys I serve with understand the risks that you take when you go to war. What's profound for me now, owning a company, Philcraft Survival, that hires a lot of former military guys, and my partnerships with companies like SIG, that has a lot of veterans, like Black Rifle Coffee, that stands behind veterans as a veteran company. It's really neat to be able to see that crossover and transition and working with amazing human beings that I served with as well. Some of those men like Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens was a young staff sergeant, served 6 years in the regular army in the infantry as a squad leader before he made the transition into special forces. And prior to that, lived an entire life experience as a counterterrorism operator in the Irish Ranger Wing, and then became one of the most well-known and well-respected snipers in U.S. Special Forces history. I mean, he ran our schoolhouse, which is SODIC, now called Special Forces Sniper Course, changed and revolutionized weaponry, including calibers and weapon systems and optics, but also applied ballistics. I mean, if it wasn't for him and a couple guys, Chance and Jack Nevels, and these men who are very progressive in their ability to adapt and evolve the regiment, we would still be using M3 Alpha optics on Remington 700s. But these guys understood the need, the desire to evolve in war, and so they did that. He was my small unit tactics instructor. He was a teammate. We stood side by side on many special operations missions overseas, in harm's way, doing bad things to bad people. And it's an amazing privilege of mine to be able to have guys like Kevin Owens work with me at Philcraft Survival as my primary training directors. Also, Sean Kirkwood, which was featured in a recent Black Rifle Coffee documentary on how he earned his Silver Star in Najaf, Iraq. And, you know, he served in the invasion of both Afghanistan and Iraq, has this very profound, impactful story of how he earned the Silver Star, being shot in that battle, and then quick reacting and saving many American lives. even though there was lives lost, Apache pilot and co-pilot were killed. He was able, through his own adversity and circumstance, to fight through these challenges with the right mindset and the right skill set. He also ran our schoolhouse at Range 37, which is Safar Tech and SODIC, which is the sniper course, and became a sergeant major. And now, you know, he works with me as the training director on the tactical side for Fieldcraft Survival. Again, amazing and profound experiences. A lot of the guys that I serve with in the military, I work with in some capacity. I mean, Rick Lofton, who's one of our primary instructors, just retired out of Joint Special Operations Command, and me and him are teaching a SWAT team right down the road. An amazing human being, an amazing patriot. Also, you know, it's impactful for me to be involved in giving back and helping veterans in entrepreneurship and marketing, whatever it is, to make sure these guys are squared away. My peer group of guys are still serving. I mean, I know many friends that I grew up with in Special Forces that are still working for different commands, and they're in positions of leadership. They're command sergeant majors, they're colonels, they're generals. And all these men that I serve with are going to be transitioning here in the next decade, doing different things, from starting knife companies, starting tactical companies, starting consulting companies, starting businesses, working for government agencies, contracting. And I want to be in the best position to help them. It's why I've teamed up with Black Rifle Coffee in many ways to advocate for veterans and making sure they're taken care of in the transition. I mean, Black Rifle Coffee Fund does more for veterans than any company in the United States that I know of. And it's amazing to see that good work come to fruition by veterans coming together and uniting, coming together over something that we know is going to be a potential issue. I just talked to Tom Satterley from All Secure Foundation, him and his wife that have that nonprofit. We potentially are going to be fulfilling and printing their stuff, which is amazing because we get to help each other, right? I don't make a profound margin off of veterans. I wouldn't do that. We don't make profound margins, period. We're a small business still, but we want to be able to help where we can. We also fulfill Jack Carr's stuff, who's obviously a Navy SEAL veteran that's doing amazing things. So this coming November 25th, we have a fundraiser for Warrior Heart Foundation. Warrior Heart Foundation is co-founded by an amazing man, Tom Spooner, who is developing and growing a comprehensive rehabilitation program for veterans who are facing addiction and post-traumatic stress. That's a bad combination for a recipe for disaster, and that's his passion. So we're doing a fundraiser at San Bernardino at Route 66, where we have 100 slots. I think it's already sold out. So if it's not, you guys can go on fieldcraftsurvival.com. 100 slots, you pay $25 for a meal. I'm bringing out barbecue. That's how much it costs. It costs $25. And you get a $25 raffle ticket, and bring your own chair, BYOC, because we're going to have a survival seminar where I give you some value and also raffle about 50 different items that different companies have been giving us to raise money for Warrior Heart Foundation. My goal is between $10,000 and $20,000 to be able to provide scholarships for them. But again, a case in point of how veterans can come together and help one another, especially in the future, not just on Veterans Day, but the future for all of us. We definitely need to support one another. Also, for that raffle, Sig Arms has decided to give a rifle, 6.5 Creedmoor certificate, where you can get your rifle and cash it in. And it's $25 a raffle ticket. So the odds out of 100 people that you're going to get that rifle are pretty dang good. And people ask me, like, why do you partner with specific companies? What's a no-brainer for me? One, they have to have the same ethics and character that we have as a company. I don't appreciate shenanigans. I fired a lot of guys in my past for shenanigans, and I won't tolerate it. I dealt with it in the military. I'm over that. I want to focus on moving forward with positive people, and SIG is that company. No shenanigans there. Oh, and by the way, every SIG pistol, rifle, carbine that's made from SIG Arms is made in New Hampshire by Americans. It's awesome. They're giving us a rifle. It's why I partner with companies like them. first form, Andy Frisella, who's not a veteran but supports veterans, comes from a long line in history of veteran service, serves in his own way in his community as an entrepreneur, but also working philanthropically with other organizations. He's going to be involved as well. I just love working with a lot of good people who are doing good things. I'm looking forward to it. Tom from Eagles and Angels. I mean, the list goes on. GBRS, DJ and Cole, all these amazing Patriots that I serve with. I want to talk about recently, based on the headlines, you're just wrapping up likely your understanding of who was voted in and who was voted out. It's amazing to see people in record numbers, supposedly. It doesn't feel like that, but I guess according to the statistics, in record numbers, people have been hitting the polls and been hitting the ballot box to make their vote count for their backyard. I know I certainly did it before I went to the Resilience Rendezvous, which we'll talk about here in a second. I got out and voted for representatives like Mike Lee of Utah for Senate. He won, by the way. Why? Because despite your political feeling and affiliation, I want to retain the right people at all times in my own backyard that represent my state and also that represent the state in the federal government, whether that's the Senate or the House of Representatives in Congress. I got the opportunity on a recent podcast to interview Tulsi Gabbard. And let me tell you a little bit about Tulsi, because I'll say this out loud because I selfishly want it to happen. I love Tulsi. Tulsi's an amazing American. She started when she ran for her state Senate seat and won at a very young age, I believe at the age of 20, in her 20s, 21, 22, 23. And then started to serve her country in the military and the Reserve Guard component, where now as a reservist, she's a lieutenant colonel. She deployed to war, not because she had to. In fact, she volunteered for combat and served in combat multiple rotations. And she just came out and said she's leaving the Democratic Party. Why? She doesn't like the shenanigans. She doesn't want to deal with their woke culture and all the BS that they say they represent, but they don't follow through with because it lacks the smell test in policy, right? They blow smoke and mirrors, they brief well, but it's not executing well because it's not translating to affecting and improving lives across the country. No matter what your political affiliation, if you're like me and you're somewhere in between, I'm an independent, registered independent, no one party defines me. So when I see Tulsi Gabbard saying I'm stepping away from this party because it doesn't define me as an independent, I want somebody like that to serve, who's not just going to be a yes ma'am, who's not going to be conforming to the corruption, but is a square peg in a round hole, and who says, like, yeah, I changed my mind on guns. I mean, if you ask me, and you know my stance on this, most of you do, around gun control, I think any control is infringement against the constitutional right. That has nothing to do with sports hunting, nothing to do with USPSA matches, and everything to do with a balance of power between the federal government, which is full of potentially corrupt people, and the balance of that and we, the people. Because if you have an armed society, you have a superpower because China and Russia are, I mean, they watch Red Dawn. They're not going to invade. But what happens to countries that don't have the power? Well, they don't have the power because the people don't have the power. It's we, the people. So when she says, I think that the government could be tyrannical, and then that balance for the constitutional right of the Second Amendment has to do with that and not sports shooting or not potentially self-defense, but more about giving rights back to the people and balancing that power, that's profound. But, I mean, social media, I mean, you'll hear all the rhetoric and all the propaganda, which is most people, which I'm kind of taken back by conservatives who are repeating, even in some cases, woke cultured false narratives being reported because they know they'll follow the bait. They know if they say something and it's not even true, they'll get a percentage of that 10, 20, 30% to follow suit and start putting out false information. Like Tulsi Gabbard is against guns. That's not true. So why do I say this? Because I don't want a robot inside of the federal government representing me at high levels like the vice president and president. I personally think Ron DeSantis should run for president of the United States and the VP should be Tulsi Gabbard. I think that would be the right position with a logical and reasonable human being who's also a veteran, who has served this country as a judge advocate, who is Harvard, Yale educated, and is somebody who has been a governor in a high-level position going against the corrupt government political figureheads. And he's not afraid to call them out. But he's also not reckless. He's also not dramatic. And then you pull those conservatives, which I'm definitely a conservative, even as a libertarian and as an independent, then I have a perfect VP candidate who's a woman of color, who's a woman who is a military veteran, who has served her country in both Congress and her state Senate. That's the perfect person that I want, and that's a perfect package for leading the country. Because leading the country is not just an individual responsibility, but the ability to pull your best resources and lead the administration to lead the country, right? And you can't just be a yes, ma'am. You can't just be a dictator. You have to strike a balance. And we know what that balance looks like now. It's completely one-sided. I mean, nearly incoherent, fully incoherent. Right now, just as an update for you who are listening to this podcast, a few things of note. Herschel Walker and Senator Raphael Warnock are both going head-to-head in a runoff election because neither one of them gained 50% of the votes. Now, what does that look like? Well, it looks like if you want a Republican to hold the Senate seat in Georgia and potentially the Republicans owning the majority in the Senate, you know, House of Representatives, the Congress is going to be a shoo-in for the GOP, then you need to get out and get to the poll centers and vote. Already, they've already hit the campaign trail, and I've listened to everything Herschel Walker has to say, and I'm a fan of him. Of other news, Eli Crane in Arizona, let me get the latest update, because I think as of yesterday, it wasn't announced, but right now, as it's presented, Republican Eli Crane flips Arizona House seat. Republican Eli Crane is projected to defeat Republican Tom O'Halloran in Arizona's 2nd Congressional District. Who's Eli Crane? Former Navy SEAL, entrepreneur, a man I highly respect. And guess what? He won. In other news, we're looking at Joe Kent's race. I just got an update on Joe Kent. Massive undertaking for Joe Kent, and got a report that right now the margin is narrowing. They dropped about 21,000 ballots yesterday and probably about the same today. There's an estimate that there's 130,000 uncounted, and because of the holiday, we won't see any real results until Monday or next week sometime. But Joe Kent in Washington is fighting for his life, seemingly, in an area that's solid blue. What I love to see is the Democratic system working in a lot of places, but some places, including Pennsylvania, including in Washington State, has some whack, funky things that happen in voting and submitting for your ballot and timing. There's a whole bunch of wacky rules, and I'd like to see some cleaning up of those systems to make sure that every vote is counted, but everything's counted timely. I mean, we live, it's 2022, guys. I could build a Tesla in my garage from a YouTube video. I could order a case of water and have it delivered to my door the same day on Amazon, but I got to wait a week to count votes because you guys are counting votes by hand. I don't agree with that. One huge thing I'm disappointed with, again, I'm not going to say I'm disappointed in Republicans winning over Democrats, because if that's what you want in your own state, then so be it, especially when you're representing Senate seats and congressional seats that represent constituents and districts. But one thing I'm very disappointed by is the governor races. Gavin Newsom getting reelected as governor of California. What? I mean, Gavin Newsom is one of the most toxic, lying pieces in the United States of America. I mean, you guys got suppressed, your businesses locked down, told to wear a mask. People died by themselves in the state of California because the overreach of the state government while he was out at wineries mingling with his friends with no mask on. And you reelected him. Every bad statistic, including homelessness, crime, you name it, everything bad is on the up, everything good is on the down, and you reelected him. It just blows and boggles my mind. It's disappointing. It makes me want to go to California and run for governor of California and just completely flip-flop that place if I had the following. I was born in Fort Ord, California. I love California. I love the people. There's a red belt that runs down it, mostly the coast from San Fran all the way down to San Jose, and San Diego is blue. But there's a red belt that runs through it, through the spine of it. But man, I'd love to go back to California where I started Philcraft Survival, Jackson, Ione area, and run for the governor. I don't know if it's in the cards, but man, I see stuff like this and I'm like, I want that place to be what it used to be, what it used to be. And right now, seeing all of the effects of San Jose, San Francisco, LA. Last night, I watched a video of a chase live on YouTube where downtown Los Angeles chase that started at somebody's house. And I'm not sure how the helicopter got on scene, but it showed this guy break into a house and they get out into the front yard. One of the homeowners has a knife and he's trying to go at the guy who broke into the house, demanding all this stuff, and then gets in the car, gets in the truck, takes off on this high-speed pursuit, and it's entertaining because that kind of stuff is like a train wreck. It's like NASCAR. You're just waiting for the crash, and that's the entertaining component because it's high risk. It's exciting. But then I'm like, this isn't Grand Theft Auto. This is a place in our country. The dude crashes. They backs up into a police car in a gas station. They wind up arresting a dude. They wind up getting in a gunfight. The guy miraculously survives, as by all observation, as they pulled him out and then transported him away in an ambulance. But I'm like, this is America. Well, wait a minute. No, it's not America. It's California. That's LA. Get used to that. Go to Skid Row and tell me how you feel about vacationing in California nowadays. I mean, I moved my company, Philcraft Survival, out of my HQ, my headquarters, in Ione, California, because of the radical gun laws, the infringement against constitutional rights. I mean, there's many amended constitutional rights that you could see that California is infringing. And it just blows my damn mind. If you sell weed, if you move weed, if you're an illegal alien, you have more rights than an American citizen in that state, but you guys voted for it all the same. I look at the states and I look at what potentially is going to flip. When I was living in Arizona, I wound up leaving because, look, my company is more, is seen as a conservative-based company, and it is because of my value system as the person who runs my company. It doesn't mean that if you work for my company, you have to be a conservative, but it means that I want the values of my company to align with the tax-paying dollars that I pay, which is a lot. Amazon doesn't pay anything, but I pay a lot, like many entrepreneurs in this country. And if I pay a lot of money, I want to be backed by the politicians in my own backyard. And then I moved to Prescott and Prescott Valley and saw a whole bunch of politicians acting crazy, where they were facilitating and giving permits to BLM to protest that were turning violent in small town Prescott, Arizona. And I'm like, we need to get out of here. And again, you guys are voting for that policy. Take the policy or the lack of policy, district attorneys in your area for what they are doing, including not prosecuting crimes that are leading to more people being in danger. Because every statistic that I've seen in these places where mostly Democrats are elected, there are exceptions, happen to be very bad places to live and raise a family. Thank God. I live in the beautiful state of Utah where I don't have to worry about that. I'm looking at land right now in Wyoming because Wyoming is in the same boat where I feel safe here. I feel okay about taking my family out and not having to worry about getting in a gunfight or somebody coming in and robbing the place. I live in Heber City, Utah, where, man, it feels good to be in a state that gets it. Although we have our problems, it's nothing compared to the surrounding areas of Arizona, Colorado. I mean, Colorado is upside down and ass backwards. Thank God for Utah. Just got done with the Resilience Rendezvous. Resilience Rendezvous was a blast, man. Big shout out to all the instructors who taught, Brian Peters, Mike McKnight, Ben Light, Nate, Doc Jones for Fieldcraft Survival, Dee Dee and the team that supported it, John Park and media. I mean, all these enablers that were able to allow this to be so successful, and most importantly to the students who showed up to build their own resilience. How do you build your own resilience? It could be taught. It's about tools, tactics, and context. It's about referencing people with profound experiences like former professional football player Brian Peters, who has tactics and tools and context on hot and cold therapy, breathing tactics to make your remote control empowering for you, where you're not just victim to your circumstance, your environment, your surroundings, but you can have control. Those breathing techniques, all of those things encompassed, made that really special. Ben Light and Mike McKnight, who went for the personal best known time record from Utah to Mexico and Mexico to Utah in a race. Mike McKnight got about 600 miles into it, Ben about a couple hundred miles into it. But ultramarathoners, record-breaking ultramarathoners who hit walls even in the most prepared bodies, vessels, they hit these mental and physical walls that they have to fight through. They talked about their tools and tactics. I shared mine as well. And really cool was John Courtney. I've had John Courtney, Chef Courtney, and the Frenchman, who's a French chef, come out and prepare food, talk through food prep with the students, and then we broke bread together with over amazing meals like venison, lamb, all these homegrown, homestead type meals, where that built relationships, which is one of the variables or one of the characteristics of building good resilience in the first place, which is your social networks. If you're a person who has four or five people in your network that are toxic, that talk crap all the time about other people, then that's going to be you. I know people personally who I used to respect, I no longer respect because they allowed people around them who don't get it, bring them down because they are the sum of those people they hang around. You are who you hang around with. And so it's amazing to break bread with these individuals and see all the similarities in each other, and in your own life, reflect on who you allow in your inner circle to ensure that the people that you hang around with, the people that you call friends, are the best version of you because you're the best versions of each other. That was very profound. Hope to do more with Chef Courtney, Waylon Lucas, who we've had out before. Hope to do more with her in the future. But I outlined a schedule with Dee Dee because it was so profound. I said next year in 2023, North Carolina has their vertical in training. Dallas, Texas, co-located with Gritter in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Until we stand up our own facility, we're going to be doing training every single weekend in Dallas, Texas. And Heber City, we're looking to do Fieldcraft experiences almost every month. I got mobility experience in February. That's on the website right now with me and Mike Hernandez. Fieldcraft community event in March. Resilience Rendezvous, another version of it in Wyoming at the ranch in April. A couples retreat in May. Super cool. Mobility moto experience this summer in June. Little Belt Cattle Co. Fieldcraft community event. August, Montana mobility event, hopefully with X Overland. September, Fieldcraft Survival Community Event, Resilience Rendezvous again in fall. And then I got leadership seminars built out. Have Andy Stumpf and Brian Peters, February 4th, right down the road at Heber HQ. I'm hosting Bert Soren and Nate Ebner, a pro football player, and Bert Soren from Sornex, April 1st. And then myself and somebody else will be there in March 4th. So again, a whole bunch of experiences, because I think resilience is best built with each other in person. Yeah, tweet about it, social media about it, but know when to put down the phone and come interact in person. And man, I had an outstanding experience. I know I beat a dead horse there, but man, what an outstanding experience. December 2nd, guys, I'll be in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, kicking off some of the training we're doing at Gritter, which is December 3rd and December 4th. It's Gritr. It's on fieldcraftsurvival.com. I'm doing pistol and carbine. I believe it's sold out. If it's not, check it out. Sometimes we add slots. December 2nd, I'll be at Black Rifle Coffee in Dallas-Fort Worth. You can go on fieldcraftsurvival.com. but I'll be doing a survival seminar teaching you all about preparedness. Lastly, I just got off the phone with my publisher at Penguin Random House about this book called Prepared. Look, I'm stoked for this book. It took 2 years. I have a newfound respect for men and women who write books because it's an arduous and difficult process. Big shout out to my publisher for allowing me the opportunity to do that. And thank you for all your support. If it wasn't for all of your support, I wouldn't be able to write a book in the first place. If we hit the New York Times bestseller, which I hope we do, it's not because of me, it's because of you. It's because of your support that we are able to get there. It doesn't come out till D-Day of next year, but when it does come out, expect to see me hit the road, talk about preparedness in a broad way. Look, preparedness has to do with fighting through adversity, through difficult circumstances, including the worst case scenario. As we know, disaster is an equal opportunist. It will hand you your ass all the same. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, what's your background, your culture, your creed, your color. It doesn't matter. And so it's a conversation for all people. They're pitching it to the UK, Australia, overseas, to all people. All people. And so I want to say thank you for that opportunity, because outside of the publishing opportunity there, if it wasn't for you and your support, I wouldn't be able to do that. Lastly, it's all about the support of the veteran community. Andy Stumpf, Evan Hafer, Tom from Eagles and Angels, Kyle Lamb, Tom Satterley, Tom Spooner. Man, I'm forgetting so many, many more that have helped me along the way that are veteran entrepreneurs who get it. February 18th, catch me at Black Rifle Coffee in Kalispell, because Andy Stumpf's new Black Rifle is going to be open up. Hope to do a lot of stuff, including content and seminars, speaking engagements at his place, but most definitely come out and see us. I want to say big shout out to Wolf 21. Even though I own the company, I don't own the company. I have equity in the company. I'm a partner in the company. Big shout out to them for sponsoring the podcast. Wolf 21. You can go to thewolf21.com to get your CBD, CBN products. I want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast on this Veterans Day. Big shout out to all the veterans out there. Keep doing you. Keep being united and being positive. I love you and thank you for your service and everything you've done for this country. Today is about you, and every day is about you and your sacrifice. Till next time. Peace out, guys. Peace.